This is 16.9 The Podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16.9 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 12 years, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon and into what stuff means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. You can listen to episodes online, get them off iTunes or Google Play, or subscribe using a podcast app. Whatever way you choose, they're free and there's a new one weekly. The 16.9 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported from the start by Jeremy Gavin and his team at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. Every year or so, Jeremiah Archambault rings me up, usually out of the blue, from his office in Victoria, BC, on the very west coast of Canada. He runs a decade-old company called ENS that has for that time been steadily developing a digital signage CMS software and management platform. It's now called SAM. With each call, he's given me an update on what's new with the platform and his seemingly endless testing and refinement. I've always finished off the conversation intrigued by what he was putting together. A decade on, his company has built up a decent footprint of everything from small to enterprise clients, and he's now at a point where things are getting serious. I spoke with him this time from the outbound marketing and inbound support call center he set up and has running in the Philippines. He's aggressively signing up and onboarding new business partners, with a particular focus on print and sign shops that now know they need to add digital capability, but want it white-labeled and managed by someone else. In this podcast, we chat about the roots of the company, a lot of lessons learned about deployment hardware and dealing with pesky humans, and we get into how he's about to finally get noisy about his solution. With a freeware model that uses a PC stick, he's dead certain is reliable and ideally suited to digital signage. So, Jeremiah, we've known each other for many, many years. Every couple of years, or almost every year, you give me a call and tell me what you're up to out in Victoria, BC, and show me your pots and pans. You've kept otherwise quite a low profile in this industry, but you've been around with ENS for a really long time now.
Yeah, it's been quite the journey. It's been 10 years of building out a large-scale digital sign deployment project management company. How's that for a long phrase to use on the phone?
It's a mouthful.
Yeah. But ENS has been around for 10 years doing exactly that. Digital sign deployments everywhere from a small coffee shop up to nationwide rollouts. And thanks as well for putting up with me phoning in every year to go, hey, here's the new pots and pans.
And the driver behind this is a really small shop that you have, and you've built this with quite a small team, from what I understand at least, and you use very lean PCs, kind of lean architecture for the software and everything else. You're kind of the polar opposite of some of the flash and sizzle that we see out there.
Well, certainly from a standpoint of lean and thin, having bootstrapped this from the startup, I can definitely say it's become part of the culture for sure. I guess the under the hood couple of things would be exactly right. We have a very thin team. It has grown up to call center has about 200 agents in it over here in Mindanao. So I'm in the Philippines right now, in a place called Davao City, right? And that has been organic, but it's definitely been asking the question, how can you bootstrap and grow on scale and stay low key and be able to have exactly what you said, a very thin operating system in a lot of places.
And how big is the company? You mentioned 200 people at a call center in Mindanao, but I assume that's a call center that's handling other clients as well, right?
Yeah, so the call center here literally started it from the ground up. I slept on the cement floor 6 years ago when we started going from being Canada, US-based to doing some of the international stuff. So it does do other things because we do get some business in on Facebook advertising, other programming gigs. But the vast majority of actually the outbound calling for the support calling with the agents is actually digital signage now. So it'll vary. Sometimes it'll lean down to maybe 5 or 10 agents in a night will be on the call center support for the digital signage and of all things. And, you know, when you're doing a big rollout, we'll be up to, you know, like 100 agents.
Hmm. And how big of a footprint does ENS have now in terms of, you know, media boxes out there?
Media boxes themselves, we've gone through about 4 or 5 different renditions over the years. And mm-hmm. of the ones that are in this round, there's about 2,600 in the field. And that's actually after, I'd say, well, with the other deployments in, it'd be about the same again. So, you know, okay. It's not kind of the whole picture in the respect that what's happening this year is we're actually going to be launching a new one called the SAM Stick. And with that, it's going to take us from, I think, 2,600 to, I'm not trying to exaggerate, 26,000 in the next 6 months.
Hmm. And what would drive that? Is it retail or a particular sector or a country that's kind of underserved?
I would say it's the long tail, meaning that digital signage has been something that's understood by the larger brands and is used, you know, by larger professional organizations that, you know, spend a lot of time thinking about what they're going to do in their front area, where now it's used in so many places that you're seeing the long tail. Businesses just adopt it because their neighbor has it.
Okay. So when you rang me up last week for your annual State of the Union call, you started talking about how it would be great to have a fireside chat sometime to just kind of talk about all the challenges of running and deploying networks and the things that you wish end users understood about what they need to think about and what they need to do.
Absolutely.
And what's driving that? Is it just frustration or, you know, if you can get ahead of this and educate people, maybe these things don't happen?
Both. So it's a bit of frustration in that we do have some deployments where I watch customers, you know, fall down a manhole and then come out and then repeat the same thing and expect a different result. Right. And so here's just a broader brush overview example. So we're currently doing a couple of condos in Toronto, literally today. Those installs are going in. And the customer has said, you know, we're the advertising company. You don't need to know who's at location. And that would make sense if you were shipping a parcel to a building. But it doesn't make a lot of sense as a starting point when you have technology you're trying to implement live to a location. It's just you need to know some details about where you're going to deploy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a bit of a problem otherwise.
And same thing for networking. So, and I take a step back and give a broader picture overview here. So of those live locations, the digital signs that are out there, we've had almost 10,000 test pilot locations over the 10 years, right? And why I say test pilot is we didn't want to go to mass market until we could be 100% certain that we could do rollouts into the tens or hundreds of thousands. And so anything that was a blip on the highway, along the way, we would pull gear and then redeploy, pull gear and redeploy until we'd have something that we just don't get any trouble tickets on at all, right? And so with that revolve of hardware, as my joke is, it's the longest test pilot anybody, or test bed anybody's ever done, probably ever. We keep running into the same issues that have nothing to do with the software and nothing to do with the hardware. That from an overarching project management standpoint, maybe it's because I'm here in the weeds doing this for so long that I take it as granted that these would be like common sense things of conduct, but I'm running into the same mistakes repeated. So let me give you hard examples, right? Rule number one, if you are deploying into a location that you don't control, you need internet to run these things. And so if you don't control the internet at a location, somebody does. So that somebody, the network administrator that is responsible for making the networking work, is going to get really upset if you just step in and start plugging in computers. So that would be, you know, if I was going to take a look at all of those deployments and the failures, a lot of them, they haven't been because of the hardware or software. They've been actually because of just rules of conduct. You need to first make sure the network administrator has given you approval to plug computers in.
And a lot of networks that happen out there, at least historically, the network admin guys, the IT guys, just flat say, you know what, not on my network. You got to bring in your own internet droppers or something like that. Is that what you found, or is there a way that you can do it, leveraging the existing connectivity?
You can definitely do it leveraging the existing connectivity as long as you have a network administrator speaking with a network administrator, somebody that knows what they're doing, getting a comfort level from the other person in the room, because it's a bias of trust, right? And so we've a tale of two cities, actually. I've got one where the advertiser did the right steps. They brought in somebody that can speak to the network person. And this is a major rollout in pharmaceutical for one of the biggest brands in the world, right? And it worked beautifully. We did the rollout, got 100% deployed success, and had great uptime. We had another pharmaceutical, identical setup, identical everything. Funny enough, that company actually is supposed to specialize in network admin, and nobody had a plan. So they just shipped all the hardware, didn't tell anybody the specs, and it took them 2 years to light it up. And even then, it's haphazard at best. So the other one on that is we're getting into really complex kind of rollouts where we have to become really advanced network. That's for smart cities. And I think the message, if anything, I was going to give is that the world is not going to get simpler here. It's going to get more complex. And there's things about networking like what's called NAC, this new thing that everybody's using, and authentication methods. And there's a whole bunch of new things that you need to bring in professionals if you're going to be speaking with other network professionals. It's a big part of rollouts.
Mm-hmm. So I've seen networks where they're in essence signing up a venue and saying, hey, we will send you an Android stick, a Chrome bit, a little Raspberry Pi box or whatever. You just need to plug it into your router or get the Wi-Fi credentials and off you go, Bob's your uncle. You're telling me that's challenging at best and it's just going to get worse.
That's exactly right. And you bring up a really good point about the Raspberry Pis. So we did our own kind of Android box device a couple of years ago. And when we went in the labs here and when we deployed to 100 or a couple hundred locations, everything looked fantastic. Okay. But when you start getting to thousands, when you start testing into thousands of locations, you start to see problems that don't happen right away. They happen over time. And, when we're doing this, nationwide testing and then rolling out new equipment, and we keep rolling this stuff out to try to get to 100%, you start to find aberrations like that are just mind-numbingly difficult to hunt down why it was happening. And so there's two things everybody needs to know. Number one, micro SD cards, non-durable memory, things like a Raspberry Pi running on one of those little micro SD cards for an operating system. It's not if it will fail. It will always, over time, have an unusually high failure rate. And so when I see all of this Raspberry Pi, roll these things out, don't worry about it. I can tell you firsthand, it does not work.
Hmm. And is that because you're like a typical SD card, it's for photos or MP3 files or whatever, it's extra storage and you write a file to it and you're done. Whereas with digital signage, it's constantly being written and accessed?
It's a bit of both. It's the read-write processes with it just being a lot more with digital signage, but it's also they call it non-durable memory, right? Okay. Well, it's literally that. It's non-durable, and the failure rates are unacceptably high if you're looking to do a proper high-end commercial or industrial rollout. Just don't use them. Go commercial.
So when it came down to hardware, and I know you were saying you've gone through a number of iterations and you've told me stuff through the years, what did you finally settle on, and what do you know are those sort of key tenets that you have to have if you're going to go with a device?
This is my own opinion. There's others in the industry that really disagree with me, because there's a couple of different paths that people are on, right? But I would say in my case, because we're doing retrofits, because we're doing blind installs into so many different kinds of equipment. So we're doing everything from, we did the biggest indoor video wall in Manhattan last couple of months, all the way down to, end cap. So our stuff has to be, different sizes and dimensions. So we use, like a little computer about the size of a chocolate bar. I would say that it has to be fanless. Anything with thermal paste has a higher failure rate. And so you can get a $1,000 super high-end computer that is, how it used to be engineered. And it's going to have a higher failure rate because of the thermal paste cracking over, 18 to 24 months under high stress versus just in a little, single system on chip. So go system on chip, whether it's internal or external. Use, if not commercial grade memory, at least test bench the equipment, do 100 power cycles as a minimum, because the chipsets out of China, you'll get a big batch of what are called the EMMC chips. And depending on the day of the week, who they buy from in the supply chain, they're going to have different failure rates. So for us, that's really difficult to isolate out the, 2 or 3 out of 100 all-in-one panels and figure out which ones have faulty chips. So it's a lot easier for us to use external little mini PCs, little, size of a chocolate bar, and then batch up 1,000 of them and throw the couple away that aren't any good. Okay.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit screenfeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that, and then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
So the general argument out in the marketplace is, these little candy bar-sized PCs, these sticks are amazing in terms of the form factor and shape and everything else, but the conventional wisdom is they're not really suited for industrial applications or commercial applications. And you're saying quite the opposite, that you've gone down the path and settled on these. So it I assume that, you're telling me that there's one hell of a lot of work that led you to settle on that.
Yes, absolutely there is. So we started with industrial grade PCs, regular large PCs, and we did a rollout for all the granaries in Canada, right? And so we got to see what happens to computers in high stress, high dust environments. Yeah. So that's the other one. Don't buy anything with a fan. If it has a fan, just walk away. So the
Tim Hortons that.
Oh yeah, is that what happened there? They had that issue. Yeah. Yeah. So they basically what's happened is the embedded computer world has been lousy for specs. And you know this. I mean, the channels give you all day. You all runs 4K, and then you get it and you actually try it on 4K, and there's no way, right? It could technically run it, but it wouldn't be useful in the field. Well, what's been happening with the progression with the out and out war between the whole Android, non-Intel world with ARM and Intel is now getting to a point where these chips, the newest ones with Intel called the Gemini and Apollo Lake, and now the new Gemini Lake, it's really hard to tell the difference between a Gemini Lake fully using all of the what you can actually do with the chips and a high-end commercial grade PC. It's blurred, and it's only just blurred really in the last, I'd say, year and a half. And it's just the very new leading edge, small little compute sticks actually are good enough for the job. And by our telling, they're actually going to outlast the conventional.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that, but I know you've spent the time.
And it's only really in the last little bit. I mean, this is, you know, blatant plug here for a hardware partner, Azul out of Miami. They got Palm's Guide Compute Stick of the Year last year.
Uh-huh.
So that's why, you know, going to mass scale is because I'm signing off and saying, yep, you know, we do a batch of 1,000 of these and ship them out as freeware. We're going to get a high enough success rate that we don't have to worry about the call center having to take 1,000 phone calls. Right.
Right.
So, yeah.
So if you're dealing with the long tail, you've got no end of first time or early stage end users who really don't know shit about this space. So how do you educate them and get them around all of these pain points that, you know, you're laying out here?
Sure. So getting them around the pain points is definitely an education process. We have a whole online training video, you know, set up inside our system, SAM, Sign Administration and Management System we built. So basically, client goes in and registers, they get their first layout, there's a whole bunch of training videos of the hardware and software, right? That part we have dialed. My frustration is I'm finding that I actually have to take a step back here and literally train people, what is project management? Why is it required? And if you're going to map out what you're going to do here with digital signage, do you have a content plan? Have you figured out who at location you're going to train? Who should be familiar at location with the hardware? And we're talking some basic stuff like who do you give the remote control to if you're going to allow switching between inputs on the screen? So I'm finding that most of our trouble tickets now that are coming in after we've gotten rid of all the noise of, you know, getting software hardware to work 100% is people's power issues that the public is not aware of how, you know, much power will affect you over time, and they haven't planned for that. And networking, coming back to the networking side, you know, the way networking works right now is if you plug something into your Wi-Fi there in your house and you change your Wi-Fi password, well, that thing is not smart enough to say, hey, what's the new password, right? But businesses are so mm-hmm. busy, especially when you do large scale, that's always changing, and nobody actually plans for how to reprogram things. So it means they continually spend money on truck rolls fixing stuff. And that's my stress point. Going back to, okay, why am I frustrated? Well, I'm doing citywide rollouts, and there's one whole side of the industry called Internet of Things, right? IoT. And they're sniffing around at digital signage because we're the front line of smart cities. Mm-hmm. We have mission-critical stuff that is out there live 24/7. And the IoT world thinks that they can just pile on more equipment, more software, hardware, and magically the world is going to make all this stuff work. And it couldn't be farther from the truth. What has to happen here, if we're going to have an IoT world with smart cities and have that stuff actually run, there needs to be some methodic sit-down mapping out a workflow and acknowledgement that real live human beings are going to have to replace computer equipment over time. Or they're just going to, these rollouts are just going to continually have an unusually high failure rate.
Yeah, the thing about smart cities is you get people talking about sensors and cameras and, well, we'll just run the camera feed through the PC that's already in there running the media. And, you know, the software company's going, no, can't do that. And you're just saying, why not? And maybe they don't even, like you say, there's just so much of a need for communication and basic communication. Who, you know, find all the stakeholders and get them in a room.
That's exactly it. And that's really where it starts. You know, if I was going to leave off on the solving the frustration point, you know, my plug is for the City of Vancouver, right? Because we worked with them to do just about every department, division, fire halls to sewage, sanitation, everything, right? Mm-hmm. And the spearhead for that project, a guy named Bobby. What Bobby does before every install is he sits down, does a site survey, and brings in all the stakeholders and says, okay, let's map out the plan. On one piece of paper, who's going to do the content, who's going to do the install, who's going to be trained, and it works because there's been some thought process in advance rather than just throwing stuff at the wall and then being reactive later. The people that do reactive have a much higher failure rate, and they're shooting themselves in the foot before they even get started.
So in the case of Vancouver, BC, how is Vancouver using your stuff? Or, you know, what kind of screens are there out there? Like, what are they doing? Are they for parking or whatever it may be?
We're really the quiet internal side. So it'll be internal communications.
Okay.
Let's say, in landfill, they have a list of the on contract people coming in. They need to know who's coming in and out of the building for the day. So it's their internal messaging.
Okay. Which in a lot of cases is more interesting than some of the external stuff.
Well, and so coming back to long tail, right?
Yeah.
The just it being, it is now getting to the point where a business just by de facto says, oh, I need a dashboard of all my stuff, because we use technology as a tool for everything now in a business. So we need visualization of that. Mm-hmm. So I think digital signage isn't going to slow down here. It's going to explode in the long tail, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I've said this almost every week on a podcast. The back office stuff and the ability to visualize data is just getting started.
And with that mushroom or explosion, I stress out about really making sure the customer is well educated in advance. So I guess on this podcast, I'd leave off with, I was in an airplane once going from Vancouver to Toronto for a meeting, and I sat beside a guy that worked for Xerox. And I had never heard the phrase before, SME. You know what a SME is?
Subject matter expert.
Right on. And so if I shipped a photocopier to you, you unboxed it, and you used it until the paper tray ran out, you'd be a pretty frustrated person if I hadn't just sat back, as a supplier and thought about, who's going to be the subject matter expert on the very basics of how to pull the paper tray out, put in the new paper, and put it back in again. And that's what I'm finding is missing in the workflow for digital signage right now. I do, just some basics.
Right. It's just this thing that goes in and nobody owns it.
Exactly. And the expectation with technology now, because of Apple and Microsoft, it getting to the point of perfection on things, is that people think it's going to automatically run itself. And it doesn't. It's more like a photocopier. Mm-hmm. You need to know some very basics to satisfy the customer.
So going back to your business, how do you sell your platform? Let's go right down the wood on this. What's it called? How do you buy it? Is it SaaS based? Is it through resellers? Those sorts of things.
Sure. So in our case, the system's called SAM, stands for Sign Administration and Management. In fact, if you type in go.runsam.com, click on register, you can set up your own freeware account in SAM right now. You do not need a media player. SAM, you can put it on anything that will run a browser. So it's more like a web push, which is, I think that's just the standard for the industry moving forward, right? And our model is we're going to freeware it everywhere with Azul. We're going to announce that here in the next 30, 45 days here, so far as industry-wide. And then we're training up what we call SAM certified partners. So I'm signing up a new traditional sign company about 2 to 3 a day right now from the call center. So we're trying to bridge the disconnect where you have, I don't know the total number, but something like 10,000 sign companies. It's a massive number of signage companies across North America alone that want help bridging that gap. But they want a partner. They want somebody that has the background network operations center like we do, whole architecture. So it's the one throat to choke. So that's where we're going, is freeware on one side, and to graduate customers to wanting to pay for the network operations center. And then on the other side, sign companies.
Okay, so if I'm getting this correct, you buy this Intel stick from Azul. It comes loaded with some sort of software related to SAM. It's free, but you're going to make your money because most of these guys, as the world seems to be shifting to wanting, they want it, but they want somebody else to run it for them.
Exactly. Even when we get really advanced techie enthusiasts, when they're tinkering around, they see what we've built, they usually go, okay, well, kudos. We're willing to pay $25 a month for a service agreement on our screens. So we basically do $25 a month is up to 4 devices on an account. and then escalates from there. So you bring up a really good point. We've been testing that that business model, and it does work. So we did a bunch of high-end hotels in Texas last week. And, you know, they do buy the freeware version, and they go, I need these kind of add-on things, and we'll graduate themselves into having a service agreement because they know they need it.
And I mean, other companies have tried this sort of thing with, you know, kind of patchy success. Some have been more successful than others. And it sounds like the two differentiators here are that you've been doing this for a long time and you've kind of got it down and continue to keep it really lean, but you're also doing outbound marketing to jump on this long tail rather than having a website and hoping people find you.
Yeah, well, so all of the partnering we're doing with partnering we're doing with traditional signage companies, we're white labeling ourselves. Mm-hmm. So we're actually in a ton of locations. People have no idea it's us. And I think that's the way to do it, is stay super humble, stay low key, keep the costs extremely low, because, you know, what does the end client want out there in the industry? They want it simple. They want the software and hardware just always work, and they don't want to have to pay much a month, if anything at all. So it has to be lean.
All right, Jeremiah, thank you. It's very late, early morning in Mindanao. Perhaps you should get some sleep.
Thank you. And you know, I do look forward to getting back to North America right now, because for anybody that's worked through the night over here, it's long. So thank you for putting up with me and sounding a little middle of the nighter over here. Thank you.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around for more than 2 years. You can click around the archive and find more than 100 conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9 at 16-9.net. There are now more than 6,000 posts in there about this industry. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside beautiful, amazing Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.